Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I meet with military veterans to learn about what they do in their civilian career. My intention is to help people on active duty and other veterans navigate their civilian career by spotlighting all the wide variety of things that military veterans can do and give them a couple tips and advice on how to get there. My guest today for episode number 170 is author Jack Carr.
A friend of mine was at a fundraiser and met Brad Thor, who's one of the top guys in the genre. And my buddy knew that I was writing this novel, and I dreamed about it my whole life. And he said, "Hey, do you want to talk to Brad Thor?" I was like, "Well, I'd love to. That'd be great." Spent, you know, at least 20, 25 minutes talking to me on the phone. And I guess I passed his test as to, you know, why I wanted to write. And you know, it's been a passion of mine since I was a little kid. And this was the next thing I wanted to do in life. And he said, "Okay. Your friend told me some things you did in the SEAL teams, and as a thank you for that, if you write a book," and he probably thought that I never would, "if you finish this thing," he said, I'll send it to New York for you." I called him back a year to the day and said, "Hey, it's done." And true to his word, he sent it off to Simon & Schuster.
Well, my guest today is an author of a book that just came out called The Terminal List. Jack spent 20 years with Navy SEALs, and then wrote his first book. His second book will actually be out this time next year, so he's already got that wrapped up. If you're interested in this topic, definitely check out episode number 95 with Andrew Watts. He is also an author who came from the military. But even if you're not interested in writing or think that you're not, I think there's a lot of great reasons to listen to Jack and his story. A lot of what came through to me in his story is the tenacity that a lot of us gain in the military and how that serves you in your civilian career. So he talks about not quitting, giving himself permission to write a bad chapter. And I think of all of you, whatever you're trying to do, just giving yourself permission to make mistakes and to fail and screw up job interviews or screw up job applications, and how that's part of the process. He talks about in his writing how he put a little sticky note about the purpose of his book, and that was the guiding principle as he wrote every chapter, character, etc. And I think that that's something applicable to all of us in our careers, of just trying to distill down what our purpose is. I think some of the advice that he has towards the end of the interview is just absolutely fantastic. He talks about finding your next mission after the military, finding that same sense of purpose, and really figuring out what the life you want. And he talks about how he had certain constraints in his life that allowed him to prioritize freedom. He wanted financial freedom, and he wanted freedom of his schedule. And that's one of the reasons he became an author. And so whether you become an author or not, I think that Jack has some really spot-on advice about getting clarity about that purpose and then really sticking to it. And while that may feel intimidating to rule out things, ultimately it gives you so much more energy and time to say no to things and focus on the things that you really want to say yes to. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes. Jack mentions a lot of great resources, but I'd love to just give a plug. I have no incentive to do so. I'd love to give a plug for Jack's book. You can support another veteran author, The Terminal List. It's got exceptional reviews. It's been published by Simon & Schuster, which it's not an easy feat to do, as you'll hear about in this interview. You'll also find a comment section where you can share your own thoughts on this interview. Stick around afterwards. I'll share some of the things that stood out to me as well. If you're not part of our newsletter, please sign up at beyondtheuniform.io. And if you haven't had a chance to leave us a positive review on iTunes, I would greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate it. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with author Jack Carr. Joining me today in Park City, Utah, making me very jealous, is Jack Carr. Jack, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So for listeners, I wanted to give just a very abbreviated background. Jack is the author of the book, The Terminal List, which we're going to talk about a lot today. He served for 22 years as a Navy SEAL, where he led a special operations team on four continents as team leader, platoon commander, troop commander, and task unit commander. He served with SEAL teams 2 and 7, retiring as a lieutenant commander. So Jack, maybe to start off, what brought you to Park City?
Yeah. So, well, first it was only 20 years, so I don't want to take those extra two for everybody
actually,
that has been 22.
I'm looking at my notes and it says 20, so I don't know why I just tacked on two for you, but thanks for the correction.
No worries. So yeah, we came to Park City because we finished our last duty station was in Coronado, California, and it's easier to get to Park City to ski than it is to really get anywhere else in California with dealing with all the bands of traffic that you go through.
Yep.
So getting up to Big Bear, you're going to hit San Diego traffic, you're going to hit Riverside traffic, or you go a different way, you can hit Orange County traffic, LA traffic, or you know whatever. So we wanted to raise our kids in a ski town, and so here we are.
Mm. It's it's one of the best spots in the world. Coming from Denver, I feel like it's a sister city, but I maybe the hotter sister of the two. It's a great great spot. So I want to spend for listeners. I want to spend a lot of our time talking about your path to becoming an author. But maybe if we could start with just I'd love to learn more about, you know, this is your first book. What would you want listeners to know about The Terminal List?
Yeah, so it's a political military thriller, book about revenge, and that's just something I always loved to read about growing up. For some reason, I naturally gravitated to stories that had that theme and to movies that had that theme. So I knew I wanted my first book to be something very, very visceral, very primal, very hard-hitting out of the gate, and decided to explore that theme of revenge without constraint through the eyes of somebody that had a career that loosely mirrored mine, but then becomes involved in a conspiracy that goes up to the highest levels of government, people in his own chain of command, financial sector, pharmaceutical industry. So, and I also wanted to explore somebody that's been fighting for the last 16 plus years, insurgencies in Iraq and Afghanistan, and essentially abandoning everything that he had held true, and comes home to this country and essentially becomes the insurgent on home soil and starts working his way up his list as he unravels this conspiracy.
That's great. And for listeners, I mean, this just came out March 6th. So at the time of the recording of this, just about two, three weeks ago, already 177 customer reviews on Amazon, 5 stars. And I know nowadays there is a more common path of people self-publishing, but you actually have a great publisher behind you. Could you just talk about that a little bit?
Sure, I got very fortunate here, but Simon & Schuster and publishing companies have imprints. So this is Emily Bessler Books, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster, and she's the person that discovered Vince Flynn, who was in this genre, Brad Thor in this genre, and just such an honor to be essentially been discovered by Emily Bessler. And yep, traditional publishing house. So it's just amazing. I really don't know how else to describe it. I feel so fortunate.
And at what point did you know that you wanted to become an author?
Yeah, from when I was a little kid. So I wanted to do two things in my life. And one was to become a Navy SEAL and serve my country in uniform. And the second was to someday write fiction. So I think I was 7 years old when I found out what SEALs were. And from that moment on, even through junior high school, college, I just kept my eye on that goal. And but also knew that eventually when I was out, I would explore my next passion, which was writing fiction. So as I got to that last year in the military and knew that I was going to get out and drop my papers, it was time to start pursuing that other goal. And I didn't want to be 90 years old looking back from my deathbed and wondering, hey, what would have happened if I'd given that writing thing a shot? Mm. So that was that was the reason why.
Was there anything you did? I can only imagine how busy your career was with the SEALs, but I'm just curious if there's anything that either you did while on active duty to help you become a better author or better writer, or you know, conversely, things that you would recommend to people listening who are on active duty to start building that muscle of writing.
Yeah, so inadvertently, and it wasn't that I thought about being an author. The only thing I thought about was one day exploring that. That's about as much thought as I gave to that. But I essentially took a 20-year break from reading novels. I mean, I'd sneak one in every now and again, but for the most part, I studied where we were going to go in the world. So essentially Iraq and Afghanistan, lessons learned from people that had been there before us, the economies, the political situation, religion, language, all those things that could help me make better decisions on the battlefield under stress. So I was really studying insurgencies and counterinsurgencies, terrorism, anti-terrorism, and those parts of the world. So as I got out and started to write this book, it really helped in developing the character. I already had those lessons learned. I had a fairly, you know, as good of an understanding as I possibly could as to what was happening in those parts of the world and how that would inform a character with a background like the one in the book. So inadvertently, it helped as far as writing, developing the character, developing the storyline. But I didn't sit on active duty and think about my future in those terms or make any preparations in that kind of a sense.
I almost find that more comforting. Like I think coming into this, I thought maybe, you know, you had spent years and years like with this side hustle getting ready. And somehow that makes me feel more optimistic for people listening who want to become an author, where it wasn't like, you know, although you wanted to do this from age 7, it wasn't like every single day you were writing 50 pages or something like that. It seems like it was more just this this dream. And then at one point it clicked and you said, okay, I'm gonna go for that dream right now.
Yeah, no, exactly. And so I had a couple years to prepare as I was getting out, because I went to after my last deployment to Iraq, I essentially went to a staff job. So I came in enlisted, did my first 6.5 years as an enlisted SEAL, then went to officer candidate school and right back to the SEAL teams. So my last time to Iraq was the last time I'd ever tactically lead guys on the battlefield again. If I stayed in and did my staff tours and then would eventually come back as a commanding officer someday, well, you know, as a CO, you're leading, but you're leading essentially from the rear. You're in a tactical operations center, and you're not leading guys into battle anymore from the front. So that didn't appeal to me. That wasn't why I came in to the military, and I knew it was time to make a change and make that transition. So I had a couple of years, and also we have a family situation where our middle child needs 24/7 full-time care forever. So that really made the decision for me. The military really wasn't the right place to be dealing with that. So decided it was time to get out. So I went to a training command for the last couple of years, and that gave me a time to take a breath, look at my family situation, look at what I'd done in the military, and make some preparations to transition. But I also had some backup plans, so I didn't put all my eggs in the writing basket. There were a few things that I was interested in that I continue to pursue now as well, just so that if any one or two fail, that we're still fine as a family moving forward.
I love that. One of my favorite books I've read recently is by Elizabeth Gilbert. She wrote a book called Big Magic, and it's about how to live a creative life. And she was the author of Eat, Pray, Love, but she just talks about how she even up until she wrote that bestseller was waiting tables and working and just kind of working around the clock, and while at the same time writing. And I think that it seems like today there's a popular notion of, you know, just burn your bridges and jump off and do whatever you're passionate about. And I love the practicality that you had that backup plan. It wasn't like the world was going to end if this didn't work. You had ways to make money. You had some other options just to imagine relieve some of that pressure. So you're not white knuckling your pen every day as you're writing, but there's a sense that it's not the end of the world if this didn't work out.
Right. It does give you the freedom to explore, you know, multiple different ventures. So, what was important to me as I was getting out was just coming to figuring, hey, what's important to me moving forward. So, although I did have these contingency plans or secondary, tertiary plans, as I transitioned from the military, the most important thing to me was freedom. So I put that as my main. But everything that I did had to somehow fit under that umbrella of freedom. I didn't want to trade one uniform, a camouflage one, for another one with a suit and tie, go into another organization, start learning the trade of another organization, start learning the politics of it, figuring out what my path was within that organization. So I figured I had done that for 20 years in the military. And I was done with larger bureaucracies, and I just wanted to experience true freedom. So both in the financial sense and in the sense of controlling your schedule and being able to say yes and no to things.
That's great, because I imagine, you know, when I think of an author, it seems like the ultimate career of freedom and autonomy. And while still being, I imagine, extremely intense and time consuming, you're able to pick and choose where, how, and when you write. And that was one of the things I was curious to learn more about was how long did it take you to write The Terminal List, and what did your life look like what was your routine, or how did you approach this massive undertaking of writing this book?
Yeah, so I wish I could say that I was very disciplined in my approach, and that was not the case with three kids and transitioning out of the military, other ventures. It was a constant juggling act, and most of it was done between 10 at night and 3 in the morning, because that's the only time in Coronado, California, where it was actually quiet. There was doorbell wasn't ringing, cars weren't going by, lawnmowers weren't going off, weed whackers weren't going off. So because you're packed in kind of tight, for those people that have been to Coronado, it's not really an island. They call it an island, but you're packed in there pretty tight with your neighbors. So finding that quiet time to think, that uninterrupted time, that's really the key, because those interruptions, those just kill you. So it's really done late at night. But I was also very fortunate in that I had a dear friend who was also interested in writing from a very early age as well. So over a handshake at SHOT Show, we decided to do this together. So this is really a 50-50, even though my name's on the cover jacket. I didn't know anything about the pharmaceutical industry, which is where my friend works, and his name's Keith Wood. He's amazing. And what really helped is that this is a it's a creative project. So it's and I equate it to, if you were to make a sculpture or a painting and never showed it to anybody at any point along the route, and then when it came time for the unveiling, you bring the crowd in, and all of a sudden you pull the curtain away, and there's your work of art. Well, no one's given you feedback at any point along the way, and it's a surprise to people. So the first time they're seeing it is when you unveil it. So this way, so we traded off chapters, we edited each other's work, we thought about, hey, how would the protagonist deal with this situation? He, of course, brought his familiarity with the pharmaceutical industry, which is a main part of the book, a big tie-in to the conspiracy. So it was great to do this as a partnership. And coming from the SEAL teams, having that team mentality, stronger as a team, that really helped make this as the best book it could possibly be.
That's great. I imagine too, because one of the things I wonder with being an author is it seems like a very isolating career path, and it sounds like you found a way to find a great partner with Keith where you were able to bounce ideas off each other and kind of keep that creativity going. I haven't heard of that before, but it sounds like a great approach to writing.
Yeah, no, it really worked out. And there was a Tom Clancy's second book, Red Storm Rising. If you read the author's note in there, he gives credit to a guy named, I'm gonna mess up the last name here, but Steve Perenzik, I think the guy's name is. And he said, hey, my name appears on the cover jacket, but this is half Steve's novel. And so he had at least one collaborative project with somebody else in Red Storm Rising. For those who have read it, it's one of his best, I think.
And what did it take, maybe from initial idea to final chapter? How long did it take to write The Terminalist?
Yeah, so about a year and a half. And there was no timeline, of course, because there was no contract. And with fiction, you have to have a finished product before you submit it. With nonfiction, you can sell an idea, a proposal, a synopsis, plus a couple chapters or something along those lines. But for fiction, you have to have the final product in hand. So about a year and a half, and then I told my wife it was done. And then she's like, well, why are you still up until 3 in the morning working on this thing? And I said, well, it's done, but it's not done done. Because to get it done, you need to read, edit, reread, edit, and just try to look at it through the eyes of someone who has not been intimately involved in its creation. Because you become so familiar with the work, you know what's going to happen, and you're worried about giving away surprises. So you might not put in the things that need to be there to lead up to that surprise to make it make sense. So spending about 4 months after it was done to get it to the point where I thought it was at a place where I could submit it to Simon and Schuster. So so about just shy of 2 years.
What was that process like submitting to Simon and Schuster? And I'm curious, like how I always think in terms of a sales perspective of like what was the top of the funnel? Like how many people did you need to approach to ultimately find the right publisher?
Right. So I feel extremely fortunate in this, the way things happened here. But as I was just, I think I was, where was I? About 4 months into it, a friend of mine was at a fundraiser and met Brad Thor, who's one of the top guys in the genre. And my buddy knew that I was writing this novel, and I dreamed about it my whole life. And he said, hey, do you want to talk to Brad Thor? I was, well, I'd love to. That's great. So he set up a call, and Brad could not have been more generous with his time. I still remember exactly where I was when I took the call, and I have the original notes from the call. And he spent, you know, at least 20, 25 minutes talking to me on the phone. And I guess I passed his test as to, you know, why I wanted to write. You know, it's been a passion of mine since I was a little kid. And this was the next thing I wanted to do in life. And he said, okay. Your friend told me some things you did in the SEAL teams, and as a thank you for that, if you write a book, and he probably thought that I never would, if you finish this thing, he said, I'll send it to New York for you.
Wow.
I can't guarantee they'll open the package, can't guarantee they'll read one word, definitely can't guarantee that they'll like it, but if you write it, that's something I can do for you. That is just amazing. We'll never be able to thank him enough. But he said, hey, when are you going to be done? And I said, a year from today. And sure enough, I didn't talk. Well, he also said, hey, I'm not going to help you along this path. I'm not going to give you any advice. I'm not going to read any chapters. I'm not going to do any editing. I'm going to do nothing to help you. But if you write it, I'll send it. So he said, when are you going to be done? And like I said, a year from today. And I called him back. I didn't have any contact for that year, but I called him back a year to the day and said, hey, it's done. And true to his word, he sent it off to Simon & Schuster. So I owe him. I'll never be able to repay him for that. Mm.
That's incredible. I think it's – but I also think it's incredible. I imagine that happens occasionally for this man. And I imagine 90% of the time, the person doesn't follow through, you know. And the fact that you're calling him a year to the day also speaks to the discipline that it took for you to write the terminal list and that tenacity to actually accomplish this on time.
Well, every bit of the process has been just a true joy, a true pleasure. I've loved every single part from coming up with the outline to sort of figuring out a chapter sequence that made sense, to figuring out the problems, how the protagonist was going to solve those, the challenges along the way, to the editing process. So I absolutely love this industry, the process, absolutely everything about it. But a couple of things Brad told me in that first call that I'll pass along. He said, hey, the only difference between a published author and an unpublished author is that the published author never quit. Mm. And that really spoke to me because of my history in the SEAL teams and in Buzz, our SEAL training program, where you have that bell and you can ring it at any time and be warm and dry again. So really that one really spoke to me. He also said, give yourself permission to write a bad chapter. And hearing that from someone that had been so successful in the genre was just very liberating to me. And I interpreted that as, hey, don't wait for the stars to be aligned. Don't wait for everything to be perfect. Just sit down and write. Just do it. So I'll forever be thankful for those two pieces of advice.
I love that. I mean, to that first point about not quitting, I read forever ago, Stephen King has a book on writing, and he talks about the place he was living where he wrote his first book, or first, maybe he was in a magazine article, and there was like an inch and a half thick nail sticking out of one of the beams, and he kept on slapping up his rejection letters. And by the time he got published, that inch and a half thick nail was full of letters, like literally hundreds and hundreds of letters, and just kept on going at it despite the rejection. And I love your analogy with ringing out at Buds. Like, it's, you know, for you and for anyone else in the military, it does take that determination and tenacity. And it's great to see how you were able to leverage that in your civilian career. And then I also love that second point about the permission to write a bad chapter. And I think that for listeners, regardless of what career path they go into, that's great advice of like not waiting for a feeling, not waiting for the stars to align, but just going after something, even if it's not perfect, and getting that first step or two done. And then it's like, you know, there's that quote about providence rises to meet you. Then the wind starts to come at your sails. But oftentimes you're starting when you don't feel like it. You're starting when it doesn't feel right. And you just have to push past that.
Exactly. And I got this from Stephen Pressfield, and I can't remember if it's from – Stephen Pressfield wrote Legend of Bagger Vance, Gates of Fire, Tides of War, and he also has a series on creativity. So I forget if I got this from one of his books on creativity or if it was on a podcast or something. But he said, hey, you've never heard of a trucker getting trucker's block. I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. So he's like, writer's block doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It's turn pro, become a professional. That's what you do. And you don't get writer's block because there's no other, you don't get a lawyer's block or doctor's block or trucker's block. It's, you just do it. So I thought that was a good piece of advice as well. He also gave me another one, and I think this is in one of his books, but I think in his case it was a typewriter, but for each one of his stories he'd have a theme. And he'd take that theme and he'd write it on a yellow sticky and put it next to his typewriter. And in my case, it's a MacBook Air, but I took the yellow sticky and I wrote revenge on that. And so I had that right here on my MacBook. And if there was ever a character, a storyline, something that didn't relate back to that theme of revenge, if it didn't somehow tie in, then I got rid of it. So that was very helpful in keeping the story on track.
I love that too. Singleness of purpose. And I think that for writing, that's great. I think that for any career endeavor, just keeping that simple, like the simplicity of that is beautiful, because I imagine it's you just have so much going on in your life, but also in the book and so many different things. And it's just kind of always coming back to that one point. And in your case of revenge, that's really incredible. You talked about a lot of the really positive aspects of writing. As you were writing The Terminalist, what was one of the more challenging aspects? And I like to bring that up because I imagine there's a lot of veterans listening to this that are excited about this as a potential career path. I think it's always good for them to know about some of the pitfalls and speed bumps and roadblocks along the way.
Yeah. So, you know, I feel bad even answering this question because I've been so fortunate to love every part of this, from coming up with the idea and the storyline and the whole thing. So the hardest part for me was really finding that time, that uninterrupted time to write. So I know that's hard for everybody, especially with families and kids and all these activities and so much social media, which I never had until about 2 months ago when this thing started to you know, get ready to come out. But all those distractions and just putting those to the side and finding a place where you will not be interrupted and you can write. Like that part is the toughest part. And for me personally, even if there's just a small interruption from a family member, taking a deep breath and not getting upset and just realizing, hey, that's where we are in our lives right now. That's going to happen. But, you know, that part is the toughest part, is just finding that time, making that time, and finding a physical location in which one can write uninterrupted.
Is there any tricks or things that you helped you find the time or the place or kind of block that out?
Well, late at night, which is, you know, not that ideal because the kids still get up super early. Mm. So I was just a zombie for quite a while. But luckily, my writing partner, his in-laws have a farm in Alabama. And so I would fly out there for a week at a time every few months and just lock down in their guest house. So their guest house, for anybody that's seen the movie Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze, this thing looks exactly like the guest house that he lived in on stilts in that movie. So I would go out there to the Hill House, we call it, and you know, there's no distractions. It is quiet, and it's just like an old country house that's on stilts on the top of this hill. Just beautiful location, and essentially, it's the perfect place to write for me.
Oh man, I'm blanking on it. I was reading a book on kind of focus, and they gave an example of an author who would literally like sequester themselves in a farm like that, like a building just like you described, and they would not leave until they had reached a certain word count. And it was the thought of just kind of like you had said earlier, that how detrimental distractions are, and so just kind of cutting out phone and people and everyone else and just staying there in isolation until they'd done it. And I can imagine having that farm was a great, great asset to be able to get a little bit of distance and time away.
Oh, it's so great. And the other part, but it's different for everyone. So for anybody that's read any of Malcolm Gladwell's stuff, so he wrote Blink and Tipping Points, and, you know, he's a great, great writer. But he came up in a time in the newspaper world where there were still typewriters and there was still noise in the newsroom, and you had to get your work done when you were surrounded by chaos and people running around all the time. And so he writes most of his books in coffee shops in New York City where there's that background noise. So for him, he needs that background noise to be able to work, because that's the way he came up in the news business, and he just still needs that today. So everybody's different.
That's wild. What about, you know, the book, so The Terminalist came out on March 6th. What has your day-to-day life been like since then? Like, what sort of activities are you doing, and what do you focus on now?
So it's been busy. The author, other military author, his name's Brad Taylor. And he told me I was going to be here. He said, you're going to be very busy on this book tour. And I was like, okay. I guess I'll be a little busy. But wow, it was much busier than I thought it was going to be. So it's been insane, but in a great way. You know, I'm so fortunate to have all these options and opportunities and ways to get the word about the book out there. But I am locking down for April and May because book number two is at that stage where it's done, but now it needs to be done. So I need to focus months of reading and editing and rereading, and that's the stage where book number two is right now. So March has pretty much been a blur of interviews and book tour, being on the road, but April, May, I'm locking down to focus on book two.
That's wild. I just assumed that I assumed you would write a second book, and I assumed you would start on that in a little bit, but you're already done. That's incredible.
Yeah, so it's on a it'll come out this time in 2019. So,
okay, wow.
Yeah,
but that's the cycle of things, that it's literally, you know, a year in advance that you're finishing this up, and it still has a long way to go before the world sees it.
Yep, that's exactly it, and that's the train we're on right now.
Mm. I always like to ask about resources, and I'm particularly thinking of those who are on a ship or on a station overseas, and just trying to think of if they're fired up about this, if there's any books or conferences or podcasts, anything that they could get a hold of today that might help them towards a career in writing. And you already mentioned I believe it was The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, but I'm curious if there's any other resources you would recommend to military members listening to this.
Yeah, well, one, so I will recommend some books and resources here in a second, but I will also caution against spending too much time on those things instead of doing what you're passionate about or what you want to do going forward. So I'd say good for a primer, good for a little bit of inspiration here and there, but I think you can also get sucked into just doing those sorts of things and just going to writers' conferences and just listening to podcasts on creativity and just reading these books by people who have come before and have some advice to pass along. So
that's
I'd say
great.
They're all great resources, but at some point you just have to make the decision that Stephen Pressfield says to turn pro and do it. But yeah, some of those ones, I'm looking at them on my shelf right now. So the Stephen Pressfield ones, great one. The Authentic Swing is in there. The War of Art, Turning Pro, Do the Work. He has some great ones. You mentioned Stephen King's On Writing. That's another great one. David Morrell has one. He created the character Rambo, and that's called Successful Novelist. And there's one by Andy Martin called Reacher Said Nothing, which is about how Lee Child goes about his creative process and how he gets turns out a book a year. So Andy follows him around for, I don't know, not a full year maybe, but for a good portion of the year and sees how he goes through that process.
Mm, that's great. And for listeners, I'll add at beyondtheuniform.io, I'll add links to all of these books that Jack just mentioned, as well as, of course, his own book, The Terminal List. One other thing I wanted to ask you about is what other advice do you have if someone is listening to this, they're in the military or they're a veteran, they aspire to write, any other advice that you have for them?
Sure. So whether it's writing or anything else, I think that it's important to figure out what your next mission in life is after the military. I know a lot of guys, in my experience, is really limited to the special operations side of the house, but I think it's the military in general, that you've been part of a team, you've been part of something that's larger than yourself for such a long time, and now you need to find that same sense of purpose outside of the military. So figuring out what that looks like, and for everybody it's going to be different, but finding out what that next mission is, what's that next sense of purpose that they're going to pursue, and really figuring out what that is, coupling that with what's important more generally. Like for me, it was freedom, and then also making the life you want. So what is that like? Someone's done it before. I'd say don't pay attention to the odds. If I paid attention to the odds or thought about them, I would never have showed up, probably wouldn't have joined the Navy, wouldn't have shown up at Buds, certainly wouldn't have tried being an author. So never paying attention to those odds, because while you're wasting bandwidth on those odds, somebody else is out there doing it. So just get out there, make the life you want. I say those are the main things.
Man, that's such great advice. I love that mission-centric approach. And, you know, I one of the things you had mentioned earlier that I admire is when you talk about that the life that you want. I love that you were transparent about the family constraints that you had and these other things. And just really, I love that you put that stake in the ground and said, okay, like autonomy and freedom, or I think you'd said the umbrella of freedom is what mattered to you most. And I find that when I talk to people in the military, they're very hesitant to pick a geography, put any sort of constraints in the belief that being open to anything will provide more opportunity. In my experience, and it sounds like this is true of your story, is that by closing doors and by being really deliberate in these are the things that I'm really looking for, that allows you to free up time to focus on that and make that happen. And so I think that advice is really, really fantastic.
Yeah. So, I mean, it worked for me. I mean, I had to narrow down what I wanted to do when I got out, and I was very fortunate. There were a lot of different options as I was making my transition, but I really didn't take advantage of the ones that were more traditional, because they didn't fit my model for going forward. They didn't fit that freedom, and didn't provide those things that were important to me and my family. So, figuring that stuff out first and knowing what those are, that's essentially will answer questions when opportunities do arise, and having those answers will allow you to know what to say yes and no to, if that makes sense.
I love that. Well, I always like to keep the last question open-ended, and that's just that I've asked a lot of questions that I thought might help the audience. I'm sure there's things we didn't cover, and no obligation if nothing comes to mind, but wanted to just kind of pass the mic over to you for anything, any final words of wisdom or anything we didn't cover that you want to make sure listeners know.
You know, I think a few things, just as people are getting out, there's so many resources available, it's almost overwhelming. But identifying what professional organizations people want to help. Part of being a good leader is mentoring the next generation so they can do it better than you did it for your guys. So the same is true in the business world. And I found that people in business are more than happy to mentor somebody along from the next generation. They almost feel it's their duty, kind of like we did in the military. I always wanted my junior officers to do the job better than I did. And so identifying some of those professional organizations in the sector that you're interested in can really help. So instead of identifying a certain company and going in at the bottom by submitting your resume and doing all that sort of thing, but really join some of these organizations, get to know people in those sectors, and just letting them know that with enough lead time that you're getting out and you're interested. So people are more than happy to open doors, make introductions, and help you along your path.
This is fantastic. Well, Jack, I appreciate your advice and your perspective. And for listeners, Jack is the author of The Terminalist. You'll find links to that at beyonduniform.io. Or if you just type into Google or Amazon, The Terminalist, you'll find a quick way there. But very excited to hear that the second book is already underway, and appreciate your time and perspective.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thanks for sticking around. I hope you enjoyed my interview with Jack. I hope you check out The Terminalist. I'm going to give it a read as well. I'll record a little intro to one of the future episodes letting you know what I think, but I think it'll be incredible. Some of the things that stood out with me for me with this interview, I liked his thoughts on backup plans. And I think that it's admirable, whether you're doing entrepreneurship or writing or whatever it is, to burn your ships and go all in. And I think that it might be a little bit more practical and be a little bit kinder to yourself to have those contingency plans. And I think there's a lot of research that shows that if we put too much pressure on ourselves, it can really hinder our creativity. It can really hinder our creative thinking. And so I like how he had these backup plans that didn't mitigate his commitment to becoming an author, but I imagine it gave him a lot of mental space to not feel so much pressure to, I think I said, white knuckle that pen, but to have a little bit more fun with what he was doing. I really appreciated that timeline that he gave of a year and a half of writing, 4 months of editing. For those of you aspiring to write, it's good to know that it might be a 2-year process for you. And I liked that thought, and I know I talked about this in the intro, but about not quitting and giving yourself permission to, quote, write a bad chapter. I think it could be so tempting to wait for the stars to align or to wait to feel something. And again, I think there's a lot of research that shows that waiting for feeling is pretty futile, and sometimes you have to really go after something, and then those feelings come to support you. I liked how he talked about finding time to write and how it was the nooks and crannies of his own schedule and the late night hours. But again, that author I referenced, Elizabeth Gilbert, she talks about how she views inspiration as rewarding those who wake up at 5 a.m. or rewarding those who stay up well past midnight. And I think there's some truth there that, you know, Jack was doing so many different things in his life, and still he was making that sacrifice of sleep to write his book, to make that happen. And I just like that story. I think that there is a lot that conspires for your success when you're willing to really go into overtime to make your dreams happen. I loved his thoughts about finding your next mission. I like that sense of purpose that he talks about and really creating the life that you want. And I love, he talked about don't pay attention to the odds. You can imagine that's true of him becoming a Navy SEAL and an author. I believe that applies to all of you. You know, I try in these interviews to paint a picture of all the different careers you can do. And even if there's never been a veteran who has done a job and you want to go after it, you can do it. Don't let those odds discriminate you. Don't let them deter you. And then I love that thought, too, that he says resources can be overwhelming. If you've gone to beyondtheuniform.io and clicked on the resources section, you'll see there are so many great resources out there to help you. And that can be intimidating, but I hope you take away from that, like Jack said, people want to help. And so if you give people that lead time to help you, they can really do that. So that's what stood out for me. I would love to hear what stood out for you in the show notes at beyondtheuniform.io. At the bottom of the page, you can leave a comment. And as always, if you have any suggestions for me or for the show, email me at justin at beyondtheuniform.io or just click on the ping button on the website, a little call back to my days on submarines. So that's all for this week. I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.